And welcome to another edition of the PCRF podcast. And I am not Dave Page. I'm Keith Wesley. I'm standing in for Dave Page today. I am the medical director for Health East Medical Transportation here in St. Paul, Minnesota. And with me is
Marshall Washick, paramedic with Health East Medical Transportation in St. Paul.
And Aaron Burnett. I'm the assistant medical director at Regents Hospital EMS in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Great, and welcome. And we're going to first discuss an article from the Pre-Hospital Emergency Care July-September edition 2011 entitled No Deaths Associated with Patient Refusal of Transport After Naloxone Reversed Opioid Overdose by Drs. Wampler, Molina, McManus, and Drs. Craig, or I guess Craig Manifold. With that, I think that this was, Aaron, I think this was one of your articles
you wanted to start. Yeah, this is a paper that that caught my eye from the journal, because it's a topic that comes up a lot, I think, opioid reversal. You take someone who's dying and you wake them up, and then it's kind of, what's next? What do we do? So, you know, let's go through a little bit of the paper. So this is a paper that came out of San Antonio, Texas, from the Office of the Medical Director in conjunction with the County Medical Examiner. And they were interested in finding out what happens to a lot of their patients. It appears from reading the article that it's regular practice in San Antonio to administer naloxone to opiate-intoxicated or overdose patients. And once they wake up, if they choose to leave the medical care, then the patients can do so. And so they started to track these patients who signed off AMA and left after being woken up from their opiate intoxication. And they wanted to see, you know, what happened to these patients, how many of them actually went on to die, to go to the hospital, and how many of them kind of went on their own merry ways. And so what they did is they took their group of patients from November 2007 to June 2009, so a 20-month period, and they basically broke the patients down into two groups. So group one was a group of patients who received naloxone for an opiate intoxication and were then transported to the hospital. Group two included the subset of patients who received the naloxone and then did not go to the hospital. And they didn't go to the hospital for a number of reasons. The vast majority of them refused to go. Some were referred to the medical examiner as death cases, and some went with police to jail or other locations. And a small percentage of them did not have a discrete disposition. It was just listed as other. So they collected data on these patients, and then they worked in conjunction with the medical examiner's office to try to determine what happened to these patients. There were a total of 592 who were given naloxone for apparent or suspected narcotic overdose and who were not transported to the hospital. So of these patients, 552, or 93% of them, decided not to go to the hospital on their own accord. They refused transport to the ED. Whether or not that was against the medical advice of the treating paramedics is not clear from the article. And then the remainder of the patients, 40 patients, or 7%, were primarily patients who were in cardiac arrest, were given naloxone during the course of their cardiac resuscitation, but the resuscitative efforts ultimately failed and were terminated in the field. So of these patients, these 552 who were given naloxone and then were not transported to the hospital, again, the vast majority of whom refused transport, they were unable to find any of them who died from an acute heroin overdose. You know, the real question in this study is, when the Narcan wears off, is the heroin or the opiate going to come back on board, cause a secondary respiratory depression and a cardiac arrest? There were some patients who died after being discharged from the care of EMS, but the authors conclude that they did not die as a result of the Narcan wearing off and an opiate coming back on board. Of the patients who died, there was quite a long time frame between when they were discharged from EMS and when they died. The closest patient who died after being released from ES care was several days, so many half-lives after the Narcan was gone. So in this study, the authors concluded that for patients who have overdosed on heroin and who have been reversed with naloxone, it's safe to discharge them from EMS care, and they do not necessarily need to be transported to the hospital.
This was a very interesting study. It was actually a similar study done in Chicago Fire. I think within the last 5-6 years, that found the same information. So again, it was a bit confirmatory as far as a study is by comparing Chicago Fire with San Antonio. Marshall, have you ever administered Narcan to a patient in the field and they wake up and go, I really don't want to go?
No, I've never experienced anybody who's woken up from a little bit of Narcan and said, oh, I'm fine. I don't need to go to the hospital.
So I wonder, but, you know, though we work at Health East, we don't really work in what I'd call a deep urban environment. Mm-hmm. So we don't see that patient population of chronic heroin abusers. So the question from a medical director's perspective is, okay, you take this information, how do you, or if do you, incorporate this into your practice?
That's a hard question. You know, one of the things I think that's interesting when you look at these studies about drugs of abuse is there's such a geographic distribution and a geographic variance in terms of what drugs of abuse are popular in certain regions of the country. We certainly saw this initially with methamphetamine being a primarily rural drug that then moved urban, but we also see it in terms of opiates. You know, here in Minnesota, we see a fair amount of heroin, but the thing that concerns me most about this study and which makes me really question whether or not this is applicable to us here in our practice environment is that in Minnesota, we see a large proportion of our overdoses on opiates to be long-acting opiates, methadone, and increasingly OxyContin. And the problem with that is, unlike heroin, which is a very short duration of action, these long duration of action agents like methadone and OxyContin can produce respiratory depression for many hours. 12, 14 hours is not unheard of. And this Narcan is going to wear off in 1.5 to 2 hours. And if you only have heroin on board, then that's fine, because that heroin's going to wear off in the same time frame. But with the quantity of methadone and the quantity of OxyContin overdoses that I see in my clinical practice, I'd be very concerned about waking a patient up with Narcan and then discharging them home, unless I knew 100% sure that it was pure heroin and nothing long-acting.
So, well, I got a quick question. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out what the investigators were really trying to say with the study, and because I guess I'm walking away from it saying it's okay to leave
these patients.
I don't think that's
what the authors were trying to say. I think they were trying to say, is there a clear physical evident harm from this practice? Is it the standard of care? So, I mean, some of you have said, if I need to give Narcan to someone to wake them up, mm-hmm. then the standard of care is that they need to be transported for definitive evaluation. Well, if I was a medical director and wanted to examine that, then I need to look and see if by doing so, do these group of patients have an increased mortality risk because of that clinical practice. But I think what you're looking at is the question is, you know, can we? Well, this study does show we can, but the bigger question, which becomes more of an ethical issue and philosophical issue, and that is, should we? I look at the study and I look at the 16 deaths that occurred, and I wonder what of those deaths could have been prevented had they been transported and placed into some type of drug and alcohol chemical dependency program. Now, one could say chronic drug abusers run the risk of death, and certainly they had others that die. But I know, at least, again, coming back, and maybe this is part of our Midwestern perspective, a different population of patients that we see, but when we look at these patients, we look at that this is an opportunity to place them into AODA programs and counseling. And so not to do that might actually place them at harm. So very good question. Any last comments on that?
You know, I would just say the one other methodological flaw that I see in this study is they referenced the Baxter County Medical Examiner, which I assume covers the city of San Antonio. But we know the drug-abusing population can be quite migratory and quite transient, and so it would be interesting to know how many of these patients may have presented to other medical examiners in the surrounding area.
That's a very good point. I hadn't even considered that. Well, an interesting case, very thought-provoking subject, and I'm sure we'll see some comments on various blogs about this, both from a clinical perspective as well as from just an overall philosophical perspective. So with that, I'd like to thank you for joining us for another edition of the PCRF podcast, and this is Dr. Wesley.